I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. I'd like to bring you the latest news from the Vatican, where at a press conference on Friday, 12th of December, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith issued a document focusing on bioethics, which bears the title of Instruction Dignitas Personae on Certain Bioethical Questions. Chris Altieri spoke to the Undersecretary of this congregation, Dominican Father Joseph Augustin de Noia, about it. Let's listen to this exclusive interview.
The document is really a companion document to one that appeared in 1987 called Donum Vitae. And I would say that the principles articulated by Donum Vitae about the sacredness of the beginning of life, those principles remain applicable in this new document, which is called the Dignity of the Person, or Dignitas Personae. So that in that sense, there's a vision of the human person which is consistent, and which the Magisterium of the Church has always proposed, that we see human beings not just as physical beings, but as physical, spiritual beings with a destiny beyond that God is calling us to, and that in viewing all the moral issues, including those in bioethics, we have to take that larger sort of picture of what it means to be human into account.
Father de Noia, what's new in this document then? You say that in principle everything is the same. Now, to a certain extent, people who are familiar with Catholic thinking are not going to be surprised by this. But the question is there, isn't it? Why this new document at all?
Yes. The very point of this document was to take account of new developments in the area of medical technology and scientific studies on these issues that have emerged in the 20 or so years since Donum Vitae. Because there are new developments in these areas, there is an attempt to apply the principles of moral theology as they affect bioethics to these new developments.
We'll hear often that the Church is against stem cell research. The Church says no to stem cell research, for example. Some people say that the Church says no to just about everything. What would you have to say to people who take that general position, and would you have anything to clarify regarding the Church's position on stem cells? Is there anything perhaps that this document specifically clarifies?
Yes. Perhaps I'll begin with that first and then go to the larger issue. With regard to stem cell research, the Church is very clear that stem cells derived from other sources than the embryo is perfectly legitimate. The issue with stem cell research that is morally problematic is to treat the embryo, which is, from the Church's perspective, a living human being, as the basis for, this is going to sound a little bit crude, spare parts. That is to say, to treat the embryo, not to recognize the full human dignity of the embryo, and to use it in order to experiment in a way that would be, well, I mean, I suppose the Nazis did it, but unthinkable if you were talking about grown, fully formed human beings. But this use of the embryo for the sake of experimentation and even for therapeutic purposes, that is what is excluded. But the Church totally supports all of the kind of stem cell research, which is, by the way, although not directly applicable morally, much more fruitful apparently for therapeutic purposes. Many people think, especially in the area of healthcare, which is really where we are, essentially medicine and healthcare, they think of Catholic teaching in terms of prohibited services. That is, they think of all of the things that you cannot do if you're a Catholic hospital, a Catholic physician, a Catholic nurse, whatever. These no's, as the Holy Father has said many times, Pope Benedict has said this, these no's are derived from very large yes, and many, many, if I may put it that way, smaller yeses. I mean, the large yes is the yes to the dignity of human life. I mean, Dignitas Personae states at the very outset that it wishes to emphasize the great yes to human life. That's a quote. And this is a positive, sort of resounding, fundamental yes to the human life and the integrity, in this case, the integrity of marriage and of the unity of the husband and wife in producing the child in the section on the second part on assisted fertilization. Then there is also a yes to science, the recognition of the scientific developments that have taken place. There's a yes to all the fertility treatments that, in fact, to quote the document, overcome or correct pathologies and succeed in reestablishing the normal functioning of human procreation. There's a yes to the therapeutic use of stem cells, as I mentioned already. There's a yes to the intrinsic worth, value, and equality of every human being from conception to natural death. So in the end, I could go on, but this litany of yeses, some of these affirmations and positive assertions have a negative side, but their principal direction is a positive account, a vision of what it means to be human and why human life is sacred, as we say over and over again, and we will, from conception to natural death.
It strikes me that some folks who either cover science or are involved in the scientific enterprise do have the sense that the Catholic Church wants something from them. And perhaps that's not entirely unfair to say, is it? I mean, doesn't the Church expect scientists to behave in a certain way?
Yes, that's a very good way of putting it. Because from the Catholic perspective, and this goes back to the Middle Ages and be contrary to what people commonly think, in the Catholic perspective, sciences have their own, to use a technical term, integrity and finality. So a particular science has its scope, its object, what it studies, and there are criteria for measuring the correctness or the general direction, even when the issues are hypothetical, of a particular scientific proposal. Now, so absolutely the Church respects that. Sometimes the conflicts arise when scientists go outside of the methodological limits, you might say, into what we would call metaphysical or theological matters. So that does create conflict. But let me just go back to the way you framed it. Does the Church need and expect scientists to provide the information that allows the Church then to make moral judgments? And the answer is absolutely yes. Just in the development of this document, I can say that it has been under development for at least 5 years, and that it is based on an enormous amount of consultation, not just of moral theologians, but of physicians and of scientists in these areas. So no moral judgment would be taken or articulated in this document that did not respect, let us say, the point where the science had arrived, so that the Church does not make a judgment. For example, let's say, hypothetically, that there were a drug that could conceivably have an abortifacient impact. So that is to say, abort, rather than just contraception. And now, there are cases where certain drugs, the jury is out on the science. It's not settled yet. So the document refrains from, you might say, going further with respect to the specific drug now, not with respect to the difference between contraception and abortion. But that's a very good example of where the science is not yet clear, and so the document does not go beyond, but it does attempt to indicate what would be the case morally were the science to have arrived at a certain point.
How important is the way that we talk about this, and what can the church do to inform the public debate?
Indeed, it's the obligation of any morally serious person, church or no church, to let the language allow for the moral judgment to be made one way or the other, so that you're not fooling yourself, if you will, by calling the reproductive choice, using the language reproductive choice to cover the fact that you're really promoting abortion, for example.
A lot of people will object, as they have in the past, to say, well, that's what you Catholics think. We don't share your beliefs, and so we're not even going to listen to you. What would you say to them?
Well, I think that the document, in a sense, is addressed, although it's primarily addressed to people in the church, it certainly intends to have a hearing beyond. And let's put it this way, it is not a matter of divine revelation to know that the life of the innocent should be protected. This is something that all human beings should know, even, I would say, atheists. It's a matter, yes, that revelation illumines, as Pope Benedict has said several times, a revelation illumines the natural powers of human reasoning to understand, to know what is right and wrong. No question. So the church affirms and assists, you might say, reason. But the content of the principles are not divinely revealed. They have to do with things that all men of goodwill, if I may use that expression, who reason, who are capable of moral reasoning and understanding arguments, ought to be able to see. People who are thinking seriously about the consequences of these rapidly developing biotechnologies on the future of the human race. And the church, in that sense, is issuing in this document a kind of wake-up call. The church, as mother, yes, of Christians, but mother of all mankind, too, is duty-bound to remind everybody who's paying attention to these issues where these technologies can lead if there is no moral, not limit, but moral perspective guiding their implementation. It's one thing to come up with them, it's another thing to do them. Not everything that can be done ought to be done in these areas.
And our thanks there go to the Undersecretary of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, Dominican Father Joseph Augustine Di Noia, who was speaking there to Chris Altieri about the document this congregation issued on Friday by the title of Dignitas Personae on Certain Bioethical Questions. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.